Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. President Trump is declaring victory on the trade front.
It's my great honor to announce that we have successfully completed negotiations on a brand new deal to terminate and replace NAFTA and the NAFTA trade agreements with an incredible new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement called USMCA. It sort of just works. MCA.
So, what's in this new deal, and what will it mean for American workers and companies? Well, joining us to talk about this is the Boston Globe's Quick Study columnist, Evan Horowitz. Evan, welcome back.
Thanks, Deborah. Happy fundraising season.
Oh, thank you. Well, first, let's not talk about fundraising. Let's talk about NAFTA. So, well, you call this NAFTA 2.0. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I guess we should start with what the heck to call it. I mean, is it right. NAFTA 2.0? Is it the USMCA? I've heard the nice riffs on, like, the Village People, the USMCA, it really seems like we should keep calling it NAFTA because it's mostly NAFTA. The changes are slight, non-trivial, but slight, and the basic framework remains in place: low tariffs among the three nations of North America.
So let's talk about some of the changes, even if they are slight. The biggies are dairy, auto. What are the biggies in your mind?
Yeah. So, well, it depends what you mean by biggie.
Okay.
But yes, the goals that the Trump administration was able to accomplish include some increased access to the Canadian dairy market. Canada has traditionally made it very difficult for other countries to export dairy and agriculture. And now some dairy farmers will be able to export a little more cheese, a little more milk, a little more sort of dry milk powder that's easier to transport. So that's a slight gain. We're talking about fractions of a percentage point in trade for a teeny number of jobs, but it's something the administration really cared about and they got it. And the next thing is some new incentives to make sure auto manufacturers build their cars in the U.S. instead of in low-wage factories in Mexico.
So is this good for Canada, then?
Is it good for Canada? I mean, again, the big picture is it doesn't change all that much. Canadian dairy farmers are not happy, but it's not going to affect them in a significant way. And the Canadians got something in exchange for that, which is the ability to continue either exporting or dumping, depending on your perspective, softwood lumber. This has been an ongoing American complaint about Canada. They subsidize their lumber industry, and then the excess ends up back in the United States, underpriced, and it hurts loggers and lumber industry in the U.S. And the Trump administration, along with previous administrations, tried to end pieces of NAFTA that made this possible, and they didn't. So the Canadians get to keep subsidizing and exporting lumber. They have to give up a little bit of, accept a little bit more in the way of dairy imports.
What about this independent tariff dispute settlement system that was involved here?
So that's, okay, so there are two things to think about here. One is the kind of lumber problem. That is, can the nations contest each other when they dump? And the answer is, it's very hard to do, and it's still very hard to do. The other is the investor state settlement process. That's like companies who are really unhappy about some new law in Mexico or in Canada. There was a system where they had their own special courts where they could go and contest these laws that are passed by parliaments, and they could win rulings from courts, special courts outside of the normal court system. This has gotten increasingly controversial. In other places, for instance, you've had cigarette companies that will sue nations for anti-smoking campaigns in these special courts. And so they've gotten really unpopular. And that mostly went away. There's still one exception, which is if you're an oil and gas company and Mexico decides to nationalize their gas industry, you'll still be allowed to complain. But apart from that, no, that's gone. And that actually could be a big deal. It's something that the business lobby in the United States cared about. They may continue to lobby against the new NAFTA. We'll see.
So this is a victory for the White House.
I think, if nothing else, it shows that – I think it counts as the first real evidence that Trump's scorched earth or sort of mercurial foreign policy negotiating strategy can pay off. He has taken Well, he's levied tariffs against Canada and Mexico. He threatened to throw out the agreement. He threatened further tariffs. He then split the negotiation, refused to negotiate with both at the same time, took a kind of divide and conquer strategy. This generated a lot of resentment, but then it ended in an agreement. And I think until now it's been hard to point to any examples and say, yes, Trump's negotiating posture, aggressive as it is, can work. But now he can. He can say, yes, we got this agreement. I think that's a big deal. I think that's a big deal for the agreement, and in some ways just reinforces his tendency to act in a kind of belligerent ways with other countries.
Now, this went through Sunday, this deal, and it was sort of frenetic. This was a deadline, right? Why was Sunday
a
deadline?
It wasn't a deadline. You know, it's like it was a self-imposed deadline. And the reason it was self-imposed is because, there are elections coming up in Mexico. And we really want to get the new deal signed before the new government comes in Mexico because they may not like it. So this is a very strange part of this whole thing is you've got a new president who's already been elected in Mexico but hasn't taken office, takes office in December, and they're trying to rush this through before he can take office in fear that he may oppose it. So there's a kind of – it's not anti-democratic – it's not outright anti-democratic, but they're sort of playing against democratic systems in other countries to move this faster. That's the only reason we had this deadline.
But this deal still needs to be approved.
It needs to be approved by all three countries.
Right.
That's easier in Canada and Mexico. We have parliamentary systems. It's harder in the U.S., though. There won't be a vote until January. That's because these kinds of deals have long vetting requirements. Congress is going to take its time. It's going to look at it. It has to by law. So they may not vote until after the midterms and after the new Congress comes to D.C. in January, which means you could see Democrats in control of the House getting a vote on this deal. I still think they'll vote for it, but it'll be an interesting test. And I mean, I just lay out why. She nodded at me, which means I can go on for listeners who can't see. So basically, the challenge will be if the Democrats take control of the House, it will be on a wave of anti-Trump sentiment, right? So they will come in, and it will be very hard for them to vote for a Trump trade deal like USMCA, USMCA or NAFTA or whatever we're calling it. On the other hand, this trade deal is not a big deal. There aren't big reasons to oppose it. And the few changes that do exist align with some democratic priorities, like there are better protections for workers in Mexico. That's something that Democrats support. Why would they vote against a trade bill that includes that?
Okay. Well, it'll be interesting. Evan Horowitz, quick study columnist for the Boston Globe. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Deb.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.